Welcome to Children of the Watch, a Star Wars show. Let's go. My name is Alex. Joining me today is the one and only Rick Villanueva from Jammed Transmissions. Rick, how you doing?
I am doing so good today. Beautiful weather. There's probably another holiday somewhere that we're not going to talk about for future people. Anybody who listened to the last Patreon show knows what we're talking about. But I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. We are here today for the Bad Batch recap. We're breaking down episode 6, Decommissioned. I'm super excited to break down this episode, especially when we get to the end of this episode, and we're going to wildly speculate who that is in the hologram at the end. Because I know the questions are going to come. Where's Mac? Number one, he did not get to join us last week because he wasn't feeling well. I forgot to say that on the live stream. I told Jonah Marie during that, I guess before the live stream, but I thought I actually said it out during the live stream. He was not feeling well, so he was not there with us. And then today he had a band thing. So he's in a band. You heard the music, the intro music, Carpool Kids, check them out. So he's doing a band thing right now. But he'll be joining us later this week for the final part of our Attack of the Clones breakdown. So that's coming this week. I'm very excited to talk about everything that happens in that final part of the Attack of the Clones, because there's major stuff that happened with Jango Fett and Boba Fett. And that's why we're watching it, is to really get prepared for the Book of Boba Fett. So that's coming later this week for me and Mac. So make sure you check that out on your podcast app and on YouTube. I'm super excited to do these. We do these every Sunday night at 7 Eastern Standard Time for the Bad Batch recap, and just breaking down. And really, we're looking at not only what happened in this episode, but how does it connect to some of the live action stuff? Because I know there's some new fans who've maybe never watched any of the animated content, and it does all connect. It does all matter. It all, you know, is going towards the same thing. So I'm excited to break that down. And then one last plug here, make sure you follow us on Twitter at COT Watch, on Instagram at COT Watch. And we just made a TikTok. So follow us on TikTok at COT Watch. I think that's it.
I think that's all of it.
I think that's all. Okay. Rick, are you ready to get started?
Yes. I was going to say something that I couldn't think, but yes, I'm good.
Okay. If you guys don't know Rick, number one, he is on a podcast called Jammed Transmissions. He also helps me out a lot on our Patreon. And our Patreon, we've been breaking down the High Republic books, and we just recently read the Republic Commando book. But I have never met someone so in love with a character, Meeber Gascon. And this is the guy right here.
He's right there. Meeber, that's for anybody who's Meeber. Yeah, for anybody who's catching this on the audio, you are missing out on this piece of artwork that was commissioned for me by my co-host Pete and Eden. They had this artist, Alex Rees, and they painted this image of Cad Bane and Meeber that I'm going to grab it really quick so that people in the live stream can actually see it better than it just being over my shoulder.
Yes, he's grabbing it right now, right behind him. This is gonna, oh my gosh, that is, yeah, that's incredible. That's Cad Bane with Meeber on his shoulder.
Yeah, this was a birthday present from my two co-hosts. And like I said, Alex Rees, it's R-H-Y-S. You can find them on Twitter. I don't remember. Alex is doing a comic series right now that I can't think of the name of offhand, and I apologize, because I want everybody to know Alex's artwork and what they're doing. Yeah. So go just look up Alex Rees, R-H-Y-S, and you'll see some artwork and some other stuff on their website, and it's all fantastic stuff. But people, like I've been saying this for the longest time, people would say, like, really, Meeber, you're joking. And I'm like, no, that's legit. Meeber's my dude. And when people ask me, really, it's because he's diminutive. People, you know, like broadly overlook him, not just physically because he's small, but like they, you know, they don't think he's capable of what it is that he can do. And then he proves himself with the most unlikely batch of, you know, heroes in the Clone Wars. And I've said this before, and again, people thought, George Lucas said it himself in an interview with Dave Filoni, his favorite Clone Wars episode is Sunny Day in the Void. And if you don't like that episode, we can't be friends. And I'm sorry. That's just how it goes.
I mean, it's the truth. I again, like, he's legit in his love for Mibra Gascon. So that is actually really incredible artwork too. I really like that. All right, so let's do this. Let's break down the Bad Batch. This is the Bad Batch recap. So this is episode 6, Decommissioned. And our director is Nathaniel Villanueva. Is there any relation there? I mean, that is like, we didn't plan that, but that's pretty cool.
I mean, if we are related, I mean,
that would be,
you know, I can use a little bit extra money, Nathan. I'm just saying, you know, yeah, you hit me
get him on the podcast, because that would be incredible. We get some background there. And then our writer is Amanda Rose Muniz. And let's break it down. So we start off on Ord Mantell City. We start off with the landscape of it. And like I've said this maybe every time we've done the Bad Batch recap, but the landscapes, the environments on this show, they're just so incredible to look at. And so we get like a very good shot of Ord Mantell City, and it's awesome. Still seedy, though. Still not a place that you really want to be walking the streets on in broad daylight. I think Batman would even have trouble on Ord Mantell City, because it just seems very seedy.
Well, there's at least one person who likes the seedy side of Ord Mantell. We'll get into that later. Anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about.
Yeah. So we see a patron to Sid's bar walk down the street and enter Sid's bar. And when they enter, they see Omega training with her new bow that she got in the very last episode. And she's not doing too well with this bow training. She is kind of missing the target. She's hit it a few times. But Echo basically tells her, like, hey, sometimes we just get lucky. That does not mean that you're good at this yet. And
if you go by baseball stats, I mean, she'd be an all-star. You know what I mean? That is three out of 12. She's batting 400 right there. She's an all-star.
It's not bad. So Sid enters, and she's got a mission for them. And Hunter's not sure. Like, right away, Hunter's like, hey, wait a second. We didn't actually agree to anything yet. But Sid says, no, you're going to do this. And here's basically the mission right here. They're to go get a tactical droid, because basically they can analyze, and this is explained later in the episode, but they can analyze clone movements and clone battle strategies and stuff. And the more that they, I guess, survive and take in terms of battle, the better they are. They get better with each battle and stuff. So somebody Sid is working for, or trying to get this for, wants that tactical droid's brain, basically. Mm-hmm. I'm curious here, because we'll get to this on the end, but there seems like there's two people that really want this tactical droid, or a tactical droid, not necessarily one specific one. They just want a tactical droid, because there's like a decommissioning place or a breakdown place on Corellia. And so that was really cool to hear the name Corellia on this show, because, you know, last time we saw Corellia was on Solo, a Star Wars story. That is where Han Solo is from. So what were your thoughts of all that?
Well, first of all, shout out to the Empire for recycling. You know what I mean? Everybody thinks they're all bad, but I mean,
good for them.
I can't knock them for, you know, thinking green and destroying environments at the same time, I suppose. Yeah. It was really cool seeing Corellia in the animated space. I was kind of hoping to see a little bit of some of the stuff that we saw, like in like Solo concept art, some of the walking cranes. And I know we're a few years away from that in the timeline. I was kind of like, you know, we're getting these overhead shots of some of these places, and they look great, don't get me wrong. I was kind of like, man, I just want to see one of those walking at skeleton crane dealies. Like, those are really cool. I like that artwork.
We did see one of those in The Mandalorian
season
2. So that was cool. We got to see that in live action again. But I was kind of hoping for something like that too. But it was interesting when we are on our way to Corellia. I immediately started thinking, are we going to see somebody familiar here? Because, I mean, when you think of Corellia, especially if you're a longtime Star Wars fan, you can't help but think of people like Han Solo. And there's a lot of other famous Krillians, but he's the, I mean, he's the most famous one.
Yeah. I mean, the other two are like Wedge and, yeah, I guess, I think Dengar is Krillian too.
And I'm sure Dash Rendar is too. I don't who knows? So we've got the Havoc Marauder, which is the Bad Batch's ship. It's on the bottom of a transport ship and they're heading to Corellia. And this is kind of where we get the explanation about the tactical droid and how important it was in the Clone Wars and how they really had a hard time when there was a tactical droid involved. I remember the first time seeing tactical droids in the Clone Wars, and I thought they were really cool because they're a very 80s type design, right? Like even the way they sound very Transformers in a way. So I'm happy to see the tactical droids back.
Yeah. I like the idea of the tactical droids as opposed to kind of the other military, you know, battle droids and super battle droids, because, you know, the tactical droid, they learn. You know, they have kind of like an adaptive technology, and especially I think it was in Rebels, you know, they had the kind of like that last battle of the Clone Wars with one, which was, you know, I like the design of these droids, especially. And again, for anybody who maybe didn't check or, you know, isn't in our Patreon, we were talking about battle droids and how they were characterized in Republic Commando against how they were in Clone Wars. And I like the idea that there is some kind of military thought and planning that's from the machines, as opposed to just like another military leader who's on a ship, like a Grievous or somebody like, or like the spider dude whose name I can't remember right now. Presenting that as the MacGuffin for this episode, I thought was kind of cool that they're looking for this one particular piece.
It's very amazing to see, I guess, how fast the Empire is in doing all this. It's like they're trying to remove the droids, the separatist stuff, as quick as they can, so almost people can kind of forget that it ever happened. You know, like if you just destroy them all, you get rid of them. I mean, even when we see in this facility in just a second, they're breaking them down, taking the parts that they need, and then just burning everything else. It's almost like they're wiping the slate clean of like, hey, forget about that. It doesn't even matter anymore. You know what I mean? Like it just really goes to show even what we saw in Attack of the Clones of like this whole thing was orchestrated from the beginning and it served its purpose. Now it's gone.
You know, it also kind of lends the question of not so much how much time has passed from Order 66 to this point, but just how much the Empire has actually done that we haven't seen yet. If they've already gotten to the point of decommissioning all the droids, if they're, you know, we know that they're already training some elite stormtroopers under Crosshair, who, for my part, I need to see more of that.
Yes.
But I'm sure we're going to get into that a little bit later. But to know that Palpatine had all of these plans brewing for so long, or at least parts of them as kind of maybe contingencies that now he actually gets to enact, that it's just like all systems go, we're doing all of this, there's nobody here to stop me. Like, let's just get all the cogs in the machine moving at the same time. And on the one, like earlier in the season, I kept on thinking to myself, man, it's all happening so quick and we're not seeing the transition. We're not seeing the struggle of things happening in different locations, but we don't need to. All we literally need to see is the machinery in place to know that things are happening around the galaxy.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it kind of makes me think of, like you just said, Palpatine's plans and stuff, and like nothing can stop him. But I'm wondering if the person in the hologram has other plans. And we'll get to that. So they get to Coronet City. That's where this is at. And they land at the decommissioning site. And just outside the facility, they can see that it's guarded by police droids. I thought these droids were really cool. They're kind of like a mix between HK-47 and the droid that we see that intakes C-3PO and R2-D2 and Jabba the Hutt's palace in Return of the Jedi.
It also reminded me of the droids that are on the episode where we find Ahsoka and a Mandalorian that had the Seventh Fleet insignia on their heads. It, like, stylistically, it looks kind of similar to those two.
That's a great point. That is, yes, they do.
I mean,
similar.
The show used to be called The Mandalorian. Watch, have you watched The Mandalorian?
Hey, we're about to watch. that chapter for our chapter commentary on a Patreon. So make sure you check out our Patreon, patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch. Yes, we were the Mandalorian Watch. So yes, they do look very, very similar. That is a great point. So they get to the decommissioning site. They start to climb up this high rise. And you can tell Wrecker is very afraid of heights. Like, he is nervous to climb up this. And I felt the same thing. I'm afraid of heights too. I do not like heights. I would be the same way Wrecker was, except I wouldn't want to go last. I would want to be in the middle. That way, if I kind of fell, maybe someone could catch me or we all go together. So they get to the very top and they head into the facility. What were you going to say, Rick?
Yeah, I was going to say, thinking on his, we know he's got a fear of heights. And we saw that in Clone Wars season 7, I believe. And there was a part of me that was thinking, we know he's afraid of heights. What if, and this is like just a way out thought as the episode was happening, what if he has some kind of vertigo and that kind of does something with the chip? Like, you know,
I thought about outside,
because we know he's been getting his head pounded every episode since episode 2, essentially. And we know that it was going to lead to something, which we did see in this episode. But I was wondering of like, if he literally was just like, he got dizzy and it kind of started to trigger a little bit of that reaction in and of itself.
Yeah, I thought, I was kind of thinking more of along the anxiety, the stress part of it. But I think you're onto something with that, in terms of that might trigger something. It might trigger that chip and make him a little more susceptible to what it's trying to order him to do. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I thought along those lines too, of like maybe anxiety or worry or something can kind of trigger that in you. Mm-hmm. That's really good. So they're inside the factory and we see all these droids being torn apart and dropped into lava. We see conveyor belts. It's very similar to Attack of the Clones, when the droids were being put together, but this is the opposite of it, right? This is like the exact opposite.
Yeah. You know, it was kind of like we had bookends of Attack of the Clones with the Fennec Shand episode where they're, you know, they're on the speeders and stuff, and then this one. So yeah, it was a nice little, like, you know, couple episodes not to the prequels. Are we gonna see some like episode 3 nods in the next, you know, few, you know, some Revenge of the Sith nods?
I don't know.
I'm not writing this stuff. Apparently my third cousin is directing them, but I don't know.
Yes. So they rush in and Wrecker is assigned as the lookout. So that means he's basically got to be like the sniper because Crosshair is not there and Omega's not ready. We saw that at the beginning of the episode. She's not ready for that kind of role. So she's going to just kind of stay put where she's at on the walkway and she's watching everything that's happening. And I noticed that everyone is wearing breathing mask in here. Should maybe we invest in a breathing mask or some sort of mask for Omega? Because it's like very dangerous for her to be in there and not be.
Yeah, see, that was one of my questions very early on with the show. Is like, is she going to have some kind of armor protection? I mean, this, we're talking about a little girl running into battle with, you know, some seasoned veterans. And they're like, just sit behind this rock and don't get shot. And she's like, okay, like.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, she's in the thick of it with everybody. And like the last episode, she was wearing that big old backpack. You know what I mean? Like she's getting a little, she got the tech on her arm.
She's starting to get the gear.
She's a little bit. She's leveling up a little bit.
Yeah. That would be really cool though, to see maybe by the end of the show, she's gained her armor, because we see how powerful this armor is even in this episode, right? Like Wrecker shot a few times and he's fine. He can take it.
The only thing this armor is not good against is Obi-Wan's fists. Apparently.
That's right.
So
that's a callback. What we'll see.
Yeah. That's a callback for longtime listeners of the Mandalorian Watch.
Obi-Wan has a tendency to punch pure Beskar right with an open fist, like nothing, just bare knuckled punching Beskar. Yeah. He's fine. He knocks people out.
He's got like manic slapping power in those, those Jedi fists of fury.
He really does. So the crew takes out some more workers that are in this factory, and Echo finds one last tactical droid is left in this factory. So like that is all that's left, is one tactical droid, and Omega spots it on the conveyor belt. But before she can get to it, before anybody from the Bad Batch can get to it, someone snatches it. So I want to ask you, Rick, like, who did you think this was in the moment? Because I'm going to be honest, I thought this was going to maybe be Han and Kira. I was like, oh, we're going here. Well, but who did you think?
I didn't think one of those two. I think that they're still a little young yet.
They're too young.
I mean, yeah. Unless they're like really like scrum rats, like they're little kids working for Lady Proxima.
That's what who knows imagined.
How long. Yeah. Yeah. Who knows how long they've been working for her. But I didn't think that it was going to be one of those two or anybody that we knew from later on in the timeline. But then when the reveal happened, there was a part of me that was like, oh, hey, look, it's them. And then there was a part of me that was like, oh, it's them. Yeah. And like, so, and I've seen some other, you know, people that are, you know, kind of feeling the same way. It's like, well, I mean, it makes sense. They made character models for season 7. So sure, why not reuse them? And we'll get into kind of story speculative things about why these particular characters, who we even haven't said their names yet, why they may or may not be relevant to the story going forward. So,
yeah. And you know, we kind of speculated last week with Jonah Marie of like who else could show up in the Bad Batch. And those were two names that we said they'll probably show up because why introduce those two characters and then they never show up again? It just makes sense for them to show up again. So Omega tries to go right after the tactical droid and the person who has it. And then it's revealed that it's Trace and Rafa from season 7 of the Clone Wars. If you're not familiar with them, maybe you're making your way through the Clone Wars right now, or you have not watched the Clone Wars. These are just basically two sisters who they kind of have a tragic past, right, Rick? Like we kind of find out that even like Cad Bane had kind of an effect on their family, and a Jedi had an effect on their family in terms of like a speeder crashed into their home and it kind of made them on their own. They're orphaned and they kind of blame, they blame the Jedi in a little bit, for their circumstances.
You know, I want to say, you know, the introduction of those two characters in season 7, we know there were a lot of people, you know, felt like there wasn't a lot of relevance to, their introduction and why they were in Clone Wars to begin with. But they had to show, you know, Ahsoka, like wrestling with the idea of humanity and how the Jedi affected other people throughout the galaxy.
Right.
Where, you know, there wasn't like a damage control crew that came in afterwards to do PR for the Jedi. And, you know, they were just like, we saved the day, citizen. And then like, they're off, you know what I mean? Yep. Like they didn't give them any like stipends to rebuild or put them in orphanages or anything like that. It's like, they just flew away.
Sorry.
And they seemed very careless. So, you know, to have Trace and Rafa be that, kind of symbolic characters of how the Jedi negatively impacted people, and to see that through Ahsoka's eyes at the time, you know, shows a lot of Ahsoka's character growth and how she had to come to terms with things that she may or may not have done in the past that she thought was just inherently good because she was a Jedi. But to bring them into this story now, again, it just opens up all of these other questions. Like, why do they want the tactical droid? And again, we'll talk about this later on. Who do they need it for?
Yeah.
Besides that, what business, you know, do they have on Corellia? You know, what's happened in the intervening time after Ahsoka left them? Is there any retconning more of the Ahsoka novel? There's a lot of questions concerning those two characters who I happen to really enjoy. I like their dynamic. I like the you know, almost the, for lack of a better term, innocence of Trace, the headstrongness of Rafa, and kind of how they work together, where Rafa always seems like, I'm the big sister and you listen to me. And then, you know, sometimes Trace is the one that say like, well, you know, it's Occam's razor, you know, sometimes the simplest solution is the best one. And she's the one to present that. And we kind of had a little bit of that in the form of a joke in this episode that really made me laugh. So.
Yeah. I like that joke. Yeah. So Omega is after it, but Rafa falls in front of her while Trace runs with the droid head. And the Bad Batch start to surround Trace. They get near her and surround her. And then Rafa is confronting Omega and she goes for the bow. And because like the whole time Omega's got her energy bow on Rafa And Rafa knows that, you know, she can't hold it for much longer. So she goes for the bow, and Omega accidentally shoots a hole in the factory, and that alerts the entire factory and the workers, and they start to freak out and they shut down the area. And then more police droids enter, and Wrecker protects them from above on his perch. And then just this firefight begins that pretty much lasts the entire episode. Like, this is a very long battle that takes place throughout the whole episode. So, like, the first time watching it, because I watched it on Friday morning, I kind of found myself zoning out a little bit when it's just like the battle is so long with stuff like that. But on the second rewatch before, you know, taking these notes and stuff, I really enjoyed all the dynamics that were going on here. Not only did it remind me of the factory scene in Attack of the Clones, it kind of reminded me of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom in some spots too. Just kind of the lighting of the factory, just kind of some of the situations they found themselves in. It kind of reminded me of that a little bit.
Yeah, that's... A lot of people have said the same thing too, and I have to shout it out. Not only is the animation of the series miles above some of the stuff that we've gotten previous.
Yep.
The lighting and texturing,
yep,
specifically in this series is second to none. And when they do, you know, on a Monday, they'll drop the the little Bad Batch notes on StarWars.com.
Yeah.
And they'll be like concept art or like lighting concepts for some scenes, and it's just like, I mean it almost looks photorealistic in some. I mean, you know you're watching a cartoon or, you know, an animated program, but it's like it looks so good. So I got like real heavy like Terminator 2 vibes.
Oh yeah, that too
as well.
Yeah.
So and again, a lot of that points to the lighting, about how, you know, the melted down metal kind of, you know, played with some of the light and shadow as they were kind of running around, you know, just shooting stuff.
I cannot emphasize enough, if you're not watching The Bad Batch because it's animation or it's like considered a cartoon or something, I'm telling you, you are missing out. This is great Star Wars content. Like, despite if it's just animation, because I know some people, they approach it that way. They think, you know, only live action stuff matters and the animation is just for fun, you know, but this stuff, I'm telling you, especially The Bad Batch, with how, like you said, even at some points it looks photorealistic. Like, I cannot tell you how bad you're missing out if you're not watching The Bad Batch. You should be watching this because it's so much fun.
There was one specific moment that I caught myself really focused in on in the second watch when I was watching with my son the other day. I think like Trace and Rafa and Omega are kind of hunkered down behind something. Maybe it wasn't them, I don't remember, but there's a couple of like laser blasts that hit the wall behind them, and I was watching it as like the heat dissipated and it started to fade away a little bit. And I'm like, to put that amount of detail, because it just could have been a blaster burn and it stayed there, but the light faded away from it as the scene was going on for those couple of seconds. And I'm like, somebody thought of that and they had animated it, and it cost somebody some money. So like, really much appreciated that there's that little bit of, like I said, that background, you know, texturing that they're willing to put into the show, even if nobody ever sees it, you know?
Right. That's what makes it fun on rewatches too, to see those little details that they put in the background and stuff. So we've got a whole situation during this firefight. Rafa takes off, Omega is pursuing her, and then Trace and Rafa come together and they're about to get away when a droid knocks the head onto the conveyor belt. The police droids are battling them that look like a lot like the droids that were in The Jedi on The Mandalorian, as Rick pointed out. And Omega is able to grab the head first while the firefight continues. She kind of runs under, I believe it's Trace, maybe I'm wrong, under her legs and grabs the head and just waves goodbye. And I just love Omega. Like, she's just a great character for little moments like that. She's just kind of having fun and like discovering things. It's really fun to watch that happen. But while all that is happening, Wrecker is trapped above and he's trying to basically jump towards another walkway, and he's really scared because below is lava. Obviously, I think everybody would be scared.
Yeah, in that moment. Like literally, the floor is lava.
Literally,
you don't want to lose that game. Yeah.
No, you don't. so he's able to like jump onto like a crane, and then goes to the other side. He makes it, but then he bumps his head again on the shaft, and he's knocked out. Like, the amount of head trauma Wrecker has had in this series so far is super concerning. And then we actually start to see some effects of this for the first time.
This was the moment in the show where like my ears pricked up a little bit and was like, ooh, this is happening.
Yeah.
This was kind of like the final catalyst. And it was like, again, more so on the watch through as opposed to the original or the first time I watched it, I was like, okay, here's the lava. They're recycling the machine bits, and here's this crane arm. And I was like, cool, Toy Story 3. And then he bumped his head, and I was like, oh no, he's going to be Buzz Lightyear, and he's not going to remember anything. And he's going to, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Where Buzz Lightyear he was like, I'm not a toy, I'm a spaceman. Like, you know, Wrecker's going to be like, I'm not Clone Force 99. I'm here to shoot all you guys in the face.
Right.
So just like weird that's how my brain works. That's a little window into my brain, folks. How my stuff works.
It's a lovely brain. So down below, the conveyor belt is going, and Omega is now trapped on it, on the conveyor belt. And so we've got that situation going, and then back up above where Wrecker is dealing with his head injury, he's starting to mutter good soldiers. And this is not good, because we know the end of that line is good soldiers follow orders. That's something Crosshair says all the time. So he's getting up, he's shooting at the police droids, and then he's shot, but he keeps repeating that phrase, good soldiers, good soldiers. And then down below, Omega is still stuck, and then Trace stops, and this is when Omega calls for help on her comm for Hunter. And then I really like this scene, because Hunter is awesome. Like, he immediately like disengages where he's at. He breaks the post in an amazing way with this is all very Mandalorian to me. Like, in terms of like, if Din was going to save Grogu in a moment, this is exactly what Din would do. He's able to break the post, and it all collapses all the way down to the conveyor belt that Omega is at. But she's still trapped. And this is where we get a scene basically where Trace kind of stops to, okay, she is a good person. She's not going to let Omega die this way. And she reaches down to get Omega, very similar to kind of like Han and Lando in Return of the Jedi. Because even Omega like grabs like a droid leg and flings it over. And that's kind of what they're using to pull him up. But then more police droids are coming to surround them, and this is when Hunter saves them both in that moment. So I thought that whole sequence was really cool, and it's really cool to see Hunter do what he's very good at.
Yeah, you know, that the way that scene was edited to another Attack of the Clones nod, when Padme's in the big container on the conveyor in Attack of the Clones, it kind of just the way that it's edited, even though they show Padme like 9 times and there's like 12 fake outs of like, is the thing going in the stuff? No, this was kind of like they were just cutting back and forth. It reminded me a lot of that. But
yeah,
you know, Omega at this point, you know, we're seeing a lot of confidence building in Omega. She doesn't seem to be as afraid or as before it was like, you know, she's the kid, she's going to run in because she may not be aware of the danger she's putting herself into. And she seems to be a little bit more cautious about what it is, even though she's eager to help. You know, she ran down to get the droid head, put herself in a very precarious situation. You know, Hunter had to come rescue her, which of course he's going to do, because that any good father would. But you know, all of that is to show her, like, she's, as they are all doing, she's picking up, she's learning what it means to care for somebody, what it means to protect somebody, to really stick your neck out. And that's one of those things that later on, when she's really, really going to be called on to put herself maybe in some actual harm to save somebody else, she's probably not going to bat an eye to do it.
Right. Yeah. She's picking up, like you said, everything that they're doing. I love that. Above on the perch, Wrecker is still out of it. And then we actually hear Crosshair's voice, and that kind of makes me wonder if, like, I'm assuming that's what Wrecker is hearing in his head, is Crosshair saying, good soldiers follow orders. Or it's just like a cue for the audience of like, hey, this is what's happening to Wrecker here. Unfortunately, I don't think we've seen the last of this with Wrecker. I think that was just the start of it. Just to make sure everybody's on the same page of, hey, any moment now, Wrecker is going to do Order 66. So we got to be on the lookout for that. Especially if they come into contact with any Jedi, I think we should probably be very worried.
Yeah.
Do you think that will happen? Do you think we'll see any Jedi in this show?
If I'm being honest, I kind of don't want to see any.
Yeah.
Because I kind of want this to exist a little separately,
yep.
But they almost kind of need to, because it can't just be, you know, like the other side of Order 66 is anybody who helps a Jedi is also culpable. Now, for Wrecker, how is he aware of the fact that, or how aware is he that Hunter let Caleb Doom go? Crosshair knows that. Or he thinks that, at least.
Yeah.
You know, how much of that was communicated? So if Wrecker's chip is going to be activated, is he automatically going to flip on Hunter because of that? Or is there something innate in the chip that, you know, helps them, I don't know, detect midichlorians or something? And if Omega, again, wild speculation, if she does have some kind of an M count, would she be a possible victim of his wreckage, if you will?
Look at Dr. Pershing over here using the phrase M count. Wow.
Listen,
I've been
listening to Jonna Marie, and she's smart as hell. Like, I am uber jealous of what's going on in that girl's head. And I can't help but think of like just the craziest stuff. And I'm like, what's the craziest thing I can think of? And it's like that to me, like, and again, wild theorizing, it'll probably never happen because, you know, I tend to not be right when it comes to things.
I like it though.
Yeah, but who knows? And again, a little sizzle behind the scenes stuff. I told Alex about a theory that I had concerning Omega last week. And I do want to bring that up later on and see kind of what people have to say about that as well. So,
all right. So we've got more police droids rushing into the factory at this point. And this is where we get the joke from, so basically Trace and Rafa are talking to each other and she asks, is there an echo in here? And then Echo pops up literally and says, yes, I'm Echo. I love that scene.
That's the kind of humor that I like in Star Wars, where it's very situational. Like all of Han's humor in The Empire Strikes Back is very situational as opposed to just insert joke here. And that one, it worked so well. And like, somebody had to be sitting on that type of a joke for a very long time to throw it, whether that was a Filoni thing and just said, listen, at some point we're going to use this. And I was watching with my son and I was laughing and he finally got it. And we had to pause it. We were laughing so hard for a couple minutes.
That's awesome. That is awesome. So basically Trace comes up with a diversion. She's going to restart the tactical droid to awaken the battle droids that are being decommissioned in this moment. And she's working on it. She's not really able to do it while the firefight is still going on and there's more police droids pouring into the factory. And then Tech gets the idea to boost the signal so that more droids can pick this up so that when they reawaken, all the droids can basically attack the police droids coming in. And they're getting more and more surrounded as this is happening. And then this is when we get Wrecker coming back to the way that he normally is. And he saves the day and he's just wrecking things. It was nice to see Wrecker not totally change. Just the threat of it was enough to make me uncomfortable. And then finally, the Yeah.
If I can interrupt for just a second.
Yeah, absolutely.
For a guy who seems to be afraid of heights, he had no problems jumping down from however high that was.
That is true.
Maybe that's like when he's in like wrecker mode, it's just mm-hmm. like Hulk smash and he does whatever he's got to do to get in a fight.
Or there might, like you said, there might be a connection to the chip and his fear of heights. There might be some sort of connection there. And if the chip is now in control, maybe he's not afraid anymore. And we don't actually know that the chip is in control.
There's some wild, wacky stuff going on in the show.
Yeah, that would be bad. So the tactical droid is reactivated and the battle droids spring to life and attack the police droids. And so in the chaos, the Bad Batch and crew run out. And when they run out, there's more police droids and they actually shoot the droid, the tactical droid's head, and it falls out of their hands. And then we get to see Omega. She figures the bow out and she's taking out some police droids with the energy bow. So that's really cool. And so they're able to dash up a very large ramp to a ship that ends up being Trace and Rafa's ship. And inside, we start to they want to get the tactical droid for Sid's client, the Bad Batch do, but Trace and Rafa also have a client that they need to get this tactical droid to, because they argue, Trace and Rafa argue that their client is fighting the Empire and trying to make things better. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to that in just a second. Then in the shipyard,
I have some things that I want to say. We went over a lot of story beats here. You know, there's been a lot of theorizing and speculation about what Omega's the mutation / abilities are. And, you know, this is not unique for me to say that, you know, I believe she's a bit of an empath, that she, when she's around people a little bit and, you know, there's a thought that like, well, she was with Crosshair for that short bit. She shot the blaster out of his hand in episode one. You know, maybe that was that kind of manifesting. But then why is it at the beginning of this one? She can't hit the broadside of an arcade cabinet in Sid's arcade there. And, you know, she had spent some time away from Crosshair. So maybe the ability fades. And it's only after Sid, the Trandoshan, possibly hunting back on her home planet.
Yes, right.
Shout out to Jonah Morrigan. that she picks up the ability again. Just by being around her, because you know Sid blasts that thing three times, hits the bullseye, and maybe that's her empath ability picks that up again. So by the end of the episode, again, she's got the ability to pull it off, because we know she's got some noodle arms. That noodle arms are canon now, by the way. Physically she may not have the strength, or she may not have had it in the beginning. That could also be part of the empath thing. If she's around Wrecker, she picks up a little bit of his strength, because it was only at that point when he started banging clankers around and she's also lost a little bit of the fear as well, just by picking a thing up and just shooting it as quickly as she does at that point.
That is very interesting in terms of Omega. Maybe she's picking up these skills, and when she's around them, experiences them, she has them. That would make her like the ultimate soldier. And that I could see where the Kaminoans want her back to replicate that in all of their soldiers, right? Because then you've got an unstoppable force that can learn anything.
Right. So now this is when I'm going to jump in with the theory that I brought to you last week. And again, anybody refute this however you want. This is a crazy thought that I had on the fly when we were recording Jam Transmissions, I think two episodes ago, or maybe the last episode. I'm not exactly sure. But, you know, John and Marie a few weeks ago had mentioned Arla Fett, Jango's older sister.
Yeah.
And, you know, she also had blonde hair, and maybe Omega has some kind of connection to her. And while we were recording our show, it came to my mind that, you know, everybody talks about the uniqueness of Omega, her being a clone, but she's the only one. You know, a gender swap can't be the only thing that makes her genetically different from the rest of the clones. And my thought was, and hear me out here, you guys and gals and everybody else, what if she's not a clone? What if Omega is not a clone? What if she is an actual Mandalorian? What if she is Arla Fett? What if this is the way that they recanonize her, that she's not the older sister of Jango Fett? She happens to be just another Mandalorian. And because of what's going on with the Civil War in Mandalore, they're kind of, you know, hard to come by. The Kaminoans have her. They are waiting for her to age up so that they can take DNA from her, because to take a child's DNA to clone might not work as well as like an adult. And they're waiting for her to age up. That's why they want her back. That's why the bounty is out there, to bring her back so that she can, because really she's only a few years away from that point, hypothetically, where they can pull DNA from her and make some new batch of possibly empath clones. And that's kind of like some long seated plan to fight the Empire now at this point, because we all know the Kaminoans, they're all about business. They've cloned other people. You do not have a viable business cloning one person millions of times, and there's money involved. They want to be able to keep doing that. Their natural adversary now is the Empire, and who best to do that with than possibly another Mandalorian who maybe has some special capabilities that we're not aware of yet.
Whoa. Okay, let me add to that. What if her last name's not Fett? What if it's Arla Vizsla? And she, of the lineage of Vizsla, Tar Vizsla, who was a Force user, is a Mandalorian Force user.
There you go. I mean,
that leads to the empath thing, because we're seeing in the High Republic that Jedi should have like different types of connections to the Force. Like they experience the Force in different ways.
Yeah, that's something that we are seeing very much in the High Republic right now, how people, you know, it's not just, you know, Force push, Force pull, you know, Jedi right. mind trick. There are different kind of like wavelengths to the Force. And who knows if Omega is anywhere, you know, if she's a part of that, for lack of a better term, spectrum. And you know, if that's the payoff for the show, I'm all in, because I'm going to be honest. Like, I'm not feeling this show 100%. There's a lot of stuff that the show's not delivering for me yet. And, you know, we're six episodes in, and I feel like there's a lot of meat left on the bone that I don't have access to. And like, there's a lot of stuff I want to know. So, you know,
Rick is hungry. He's ready.
Yeah, I am. Playing speculation at this point is kind of what's keeping me going, and having these kind of crazy way out ideas, and having somebody like, I'm going to shout her out again, having somebody like John Marie, who knows the animated space much better than I do.
Yeah.
And you know, throw these connections out and to kind of branch off of that, for me, that like, that's what's keeping me invested. Outside of the fact that my son loves the show and I get to watch it with him, experience it, you know, through his eyes. But just for my 43-year-old self, like, that's what's keeping me going, is the speculation. Because I mean, if we know a Filoni vehicle and how he drives that, what he does, it's going to build into something bigger later. There's going to be more heavier thematic things. All of these episodes right now seem very adventure of the week, cameo of the week.
Yeah.
And it's fine. It's fun for what it is.
It's kind of how Rebels started off.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, do we need four seasons of the Bad Batch? Personally, I would say no. But, you know, I'm going to be there for what they give us. And whatever the payoff is, I would like to be right, you know, just for selfish reasons. Yeah. But if I'm not, and it's some other payoff that I hadn't even considered yet that still, you know, equally blows my mind, then hell yeah, good on everybody for crafting the story the way that they did.
Yeah, I'm super excited to see where this is going. I mean, one of the reasons I love this show so much is just that transition from Republic to Empire, and it's not a Jedi's perspective. And that kind of goes back to what you said earlier of like, you kind of hope that we don't see Jedi in this show, because it's been kind of nice to see things happening not from the Jedi's perspective, just from soldiers' perspectives. And I think that's really cool. So they're in the shipyard on Coronet City, and they're about to part ways. The Bad Batch are going to go their way. Trace and Raph are going to go their way. And Hunter ends up giving them a data rod full of the information that the tactical droid had to Trace and Raph. So both parties kind of win here. And so they part ways. And then in Trace and Raph's ship, R7 projects a hologram, and this is the client that Trace and Rafa are working for. And we only see like the shoulder of the hologram. And there has been so much speculation on who this might be. I've heard I've heard everything from, you know, they say it's a he. So like, we'll start there. I've heard everything from Bell Organa, which makes sense. You know, like they mentioned that this person's fighting against the Empire, that they wanted this tactical droid for good reasons to fight against the Empire. Bell Organa, I don't think Bell is there yet. I don't think he's quite in the open rebellion phase yet. Because I don't think he would be thinking, I need to defeat clones. You know what I'm saying?
No, but if you want to use the deleted scene from Revenge of the Sith with him and Padme and Mon Mothma, kind of like the seeds of the rebellion at that point before Order 66, knowing that the government as it existed was a threat. There is the possibility that, you know, those, now that the Empire is a thing, that he could be a little more hands-on.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. It almost seems like it's likely, but I don't think that it is.
He's doing something. I mean, if Leia, Princess of Alderaan, if Claudia Gray's fantastic novel taught us anything, that he's been in the thick of it for a very long time.
Yes.
And he's right to be skeptical with certain people, which again, we see in that book. But what's his connection to Trace and Rafa?
Right.
I don't see one. So for me, like, put the line right through Bail Organa. I don't believe it's him.
I'm also putting the line through him. And we'll probably both be wrong, but I don't think that it's him. I've also seen that. Now this is wild speculation. I've seen some people say Mace Windu. I don't know what it is with some people's like obsession with Mace coming back. It's not Mace Windu. I can go ahead and tell you right now. It's not Mace Windu. Now this one's an interesting one. I've seen some people speculate, and it was on our thumbnail, Darth Maul. And when I thought about it at first, I was like, no. But then I kept thinking about it because, like, the way that the shoulder looks, like, I mean, we're analyzing shoulders here. It is very similar to what Maul was wearing in the Clone Wars Season 7. And also, when you think about what Trace and Rafa said, they said, he is fighting the Empire and he wants to do something with this tactical droid, basically. Darth Maul is fighting the Empire. He's building Crimson Dawn at this point. I mean,
He's kind of fighting Sheev. He's not really fighting the Empire. I don't even think he really gives a damn about anybody else. He's more concerned that he's very single-minded. As a self-professed shoulder, back shoulder expert.
Why you're on.
Yeah, I don't believe. You can't see my credentials back there. It's on the bottom shelf. I do not think that it's Maul.
You don't think it's Maul?
Because again, what's the connection to Trace and Rafa?
Here's the connection. They're okay. Maybe, you know, because they blame Jedi for the death of their way of life, their family, all that. There could be a connection there in terms of Maul can exploit that.
But what does that say? That just means that they didn't learn anything from Ahsoka.
That's true.
And I don't know if I like that, because if Ahsoka's anything at this point, she's a bit of a teacher herself. So
yeah, that is true. Okay. So who else could this be? So Bell Organa, Mace Windu, neither of those. Maul, probably not. Who else could it be?
For me, the most logical answer is probably Rex. As we were watching the episode, both the first time I watched it and again when I watched it with my son, it was like R7 got destroyed on the Tribunal in Clone Wars Season 7. When that ship went down, all the droids, you know, essentially sacrificed themselves. At the end of the episode, though, Rex and Ahsoka gathered up the pieces of R7 and put it in the Y-wing. So if it is the same droid, and it appears to be, depending on the color scheme that your eyes choose to see,
it's like that dress thing.
In a couple of scenes, R7 seems to have changed colors. Maybe he's a changeling like Sam Wilson. To me, it would make sense with it's Rex, since Rex and Ahsoka picked up the pieces of R7 and rebuilt it. And then As much as I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Ahsoka. I don't want Ahsoka in the show. It would bridge the gap to Rex, because we saw him in the trailer. We know that he's going to be in the show at some point. We don't know where he is. You know, it also lends the connection to what's going on with Wrecker's chip. Since he at this point has had his removed, we don't know if he's with Gregor and Wolf, if they've had theirs removed at this point. And we know that Tech is building the device to kind of deal with how their chips work. And if Wrecker is having some kind of, if he's having some lingering effects, you know, if he starts, you know, just spouting off good soldiers, or he starts acting weirdly, because Hunter knows something's going on. Wrecker said, you know, I'm fine. It's just a headache or whatever he said. It's a space ache because it's Star Wars and we got to give it a cool name. If he's aware. So that might be the thing that tells Tech, like, okay, we need other parts to build this device to help out. Maybe they just coincidentally happen to find Wrecker Rex, because we know that he's on a place where some battle happened. There seems to be some downed ships. You know, maybe there's a little bit of scavenging going on. We hear a little bit of Jedi steps, and I'm going crazy. That could be where they get extra parts that he needs to finish the device. And Rex would be the one to say, well, listen, I've had mine removed. This was essentially the procedure. These capital ships, you know, maybe they have one of these things to take it out, because Rex had his head go like basically in an MRI machine to remove it. It wasn't like Ahsoka was there with, you know, pliers and doing some MacGyver nonsense to get the thing out of his head. Maybe, you know, capital ships happen to have the thing, Republic ships happen to have it. And that's how they get Wrecker's chip out, but it's going to be a race against time. And
that makes sense. Said,
yeah. But then why is Rex wearing robes?
Maybe he's wearing Darth Maul's robe. Maybe Darth Maul left his robe after that whole situation, and he's wearing Darth Maul's robe because it looks cool. I mean, makes sense to me. I just had to put this comment up. Jimmy Smits is beefy. I don't know what's happening in the chat right now, but
Nathan, listen, Nathan knows what's up. If anybody knows beefy, Nathan knows beefy. So, and for anybody who hasn't seen, Jimmy Smits is getting his star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. So
we need more Jimmy Smits in Star Wars, guys. So I'd love to see him return.
Give me all the Jimmy Smits. That's my dude.
He's got to be an Andor, right? He's got to be an Andor.
Of course.
Him and Meeber, Andor. What a missed opportunity that would be if he's not in it. All right, so we're going to move into our question portion of the Bad Batch Recap. We're going to answer some of your questions from the live chat, just a few. So go ahead and ask those questions. But yeah, as they're typing those questions up, I do really like that idea that it is Rex. I think out of all the possible scenarios, I think you're right in that, because we know that he's got to get his chip removed and all the, you know, that just makes sense to me in terms of it's Rex and not anybody else. Even though, I mean, it would be cool to see what Maul is doing with Crimson Dawn in this era. Maybe what Dryden Vos is doing during this era, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with not seeing that because, you know, Rex is cool. So
now, before we get into any questions, I want to ask you a question about who we believe is in that hologram. Craziest, wildest, you know, spitball idea, you know, 100% it'll probably never be the person. Who could it be? Just the craziest. There's no way in heck that it's going to be this person, but who do you think?
Toro Calican's father, Moro Calican of Calican Corporation. I think that's, I think, okay. So we have a question that doesn't have to do with the Bad Batch, but, this one, here it is. Could Rick please explain the balance of the Force?
See, Nathan, when a Force mommy and a Force daddy love each other, I'm not going to answer. Wow. Listen, you take that back to Tumbling Saber. You ask Corey that question because he's the one that brought that up. That's the inside thing between Nathan and I. We're good buds. I'm not going to answer that here. This is not the time or the place.
Are you sure? This is your last chance.
Yeah.
Kevin says,
don't owe, I don't owe Nathan anything. Fix your internet connection, Nathan.
Kevin says, wildest speculation for me is Quinlan Voss. That would be cool. Quinlan Voss showing up. You know, like I think that's a happy medium in terms of if we're going to see a Jedi, it would make sense to see Quinlan Voss in the Bad Batch, because, you know, I think it was Sal from Rogue Rebels saying, mm-hmm. Sid would probably be the informant for Quinlan Voss. Like that connection makes total sense in terms of Voss having some connections to the underworld.
Well, if I can give you my crazy speculative, like there's no way it's going to be this person in the hologram.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was like, what if it's Ezra's dad? Just like, bring the Bridgers into this thing, because we know they had some kind of connections with what was going on behind the scenes. So like, yeah, give me the Bridgers here.
Jonah Marie would love what that. That would be awesome. That would be incredible. okay. Is Crosshair's team now the Batter Batch? It's a funny joke, but I would like to see, just a Crosshair episode. I want to see what's going on with Crosshair and the Imperial Troopers. I would like to see that.
That's a lot of like, that's one of the things that I'm really missing in the show, because they planted those seeds in one quick scene when Crosshair kind of sits on his bunk and kind of puts his head down a little bit. Like, it just planted that seed that he's aware of what he's doing, but has no control. Does he feel some remorse? Does he feel that loss of control? Does he really want to do what he's doing? Or is it just so much that the chip has taken over where he's kind of like trapped inside? And like, that's the story that I want. That's, for me, that's kind of the meaty conflict of the show. At least like in the internal space, like how do you combat that? And you know me, Alex, like we talk about stuff thematically in the whys of things when we do our book reviews. And like, I want to know that why. I want to know what it is, what's going on with Crosshair. Because we haven't seen him in four episodes. We haven't seen him in a month.
And, I miss him.
You know, I don't need a 100% Crosshair episode. And I kind of didn't get the criticism of that, the episode replacements where it bounced from one to the other. I can understand maybe going from a lighter moment to a heavier moment, you know, editing that together might be a little off-putting, but I like the A and B story.
Me too.
You know, we could have had at least one or two small scenes with Crosshair in one of these four episodes that we've had. And like, I've said this on Twitter and stuff, that like Crosshair is my focus on this show. The other Bad Batch members, they're fine. None of them is a favorite for me. Omega's cool. I like her. What's not to like about Omega? But for me, the real meaty thematic conflict right now is happening with Crosshair, and we haven't gotten much of it yet.
I thought Crosshair might be your most favorite character when you showed up on this live stream with the bullseye tattoo over your eye, for those who are just listening. Pretty interesting. We got a couple more questions here, and then we'll head out. Do you think Sid is going to turn on the batch because they didn't bring back the droid head and they'll be on the run next episode? Not quite.
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. Sid has some other kind of motive. I mean, she seemed to have some kind of connection to the guild that she may have almost lost. That's kind of my thinking, is that, you know, she doesn't have the Jedi anymore to act as an informant to. And like, you know, the batch coming through is kind of giving her a purpose. Maybe she's trying to get in somebody's good graces. Obviously, she, you know, might be sitting in good graces with Jabba, having attained Mucci last week or the week before. You know, maybe she's trying to make a name for herself and say, like, I have reliable contacts and intel, and she's trying to, you know, elevate herself again in that underworld where, you know, she kind of had it before with the Jedi, and the Jedi are no more. Maybe she wants to find a way into the guild and you know, through higher.
I like that. I like that. All right, one last one here. That him rules out the most fun speculation. I tend to agree with that.
No, it doesn't. No, yeah, Nathan, I'm going to disagree with you because we didn't know that Emphis Ness was female until she took the mask off. What if nobody knows what's under the mask and it's still him because nobody knows who it is? We know that it's Emphis Ness' mom, but nobody else does.
Yeah. I'd throw out Emphis Ness' mother otherwise. So yeah, maybe it is Emphis Ness' mother in that mask because we did think that was a male the whole time in Solo until she took the mask off. That's a very good point by you.
They had the voice modulation. We had no way of knowing.
Yeah, that's good. All right. So this was a lot of fun. I think you are probably right. So I'm going to award you 15 points for the Bad Batch recap. I guess we're doing points now and you've got 15. So I think it's Rex now. You've convinced me. I think it's very possible we'll probably see Rex very, very soon. There's not much left from the trailer that we got. And that is one of the only things left is seeing Rex. So I'm excited about that. If you're watching on the live stream, do us a big favor and hit that like button on our YouTube so that more people can watch this and have fun watching it as we speculate wildly what's going on the Bad Batch. And before we get out of here, Rick, where can people follow you and find you on social media?
Real quickly, before I get into all the socials, I want to put out the biggest amount of support that I can for our friends over at Pink Milk.
Yeah.
I love those guys very much and go check out their channel. It's always a lot of fun. Hit up the Steam Room on a Friday night with them. So that whole community and
they're awesome.
Pink Milk, especially right now, are some of my favorite people in this fan space. Yeah. But back to business. You can find me on Twitter at CadBanesBounty, where I'm having a lot of fun goofing around, making up words to describe people that I don't really like. Some of you may have seen that. You can also catch me on Jam Transmissions. Follow us on Twitter at JTComlink. This is kind of the first time we're saying it openly, but we've decided to take a little bit of a summer break. So we're going to be out for a couple of weeks. We haven't really set a date as to when we're going to come back, but when we do, we got some big stuff planned. So hopefully we get some crossover between the Children of the Watch and the Jam Transmission people. Because who doesn't love a good crosshair? Crossover. Oh, I misspoke. See how that worked?
I mean, it's your eye tattoo. It's your eye tattoo. Well, this has been a lot of fun, Rick. Thank you for joining us. Again, check out Jam Transmissions, Pink Milk, all that. It is awesome. We love you guys. Keep the watch.